Hi folks, welcome along to this week's show. Thank you very much indeed for choosing to listen to Soundtrackin', another episode where I dive into the minds of the great and good about film, TV and music. I have to say a massive thank you to this week's guest who got me out a little bit of a pickle when another interview timings got mixed up. So I reached out and asked if he would very kindly step in, and he messaged me back straight away, went, "Of course!" So I'm very excited to share with you this week's guest, who I've got to say, such a laugh at chatting to about music, which I think you wouldn't automatically think of music when you think of this person. So our latest guest on Soundtrackin' is an actor, a model, musician, who established himself in the mainstream with his chilling performance as serial killer Paul Spector in critically acclaimed drama The Fall. Oh yes, it's Jamie Dornan. And he's since landed a string of leading roles, including the part of Christian Grey, of course, in 50 Shades series, and Nick in Untogether, which was written and directed by former guest on the show, the fabulous Emma Forrest. His latest outing, very funny, sees him appear alongside Kristen Wiig and Annie Mamullo in this madcap comedy, Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar, which I can assure you is an absolute hoot. Plenty more on that shortly, but first, a quick word from our friends at Sofa.com. Now, when it comes to watching films and TV, I think one of the most important things that can enhance the experience is having the perfect sofa to snuggle up on, and that is where Sofa.com come in. A premium brand that make beautiful, comfortable, handmade products, they are the perfect choice to help you create your perfect sofa. First, choose your ideal shape, from something traditional to maybe something a bit more contemporary. Then work out the size. You'll find the perfect fit, whether the space is cozy or sprawling. And when it comes to fabrics, well, you're really spoilt for choice with hundreds of options to style things your way. Finding it hard to decide? Then why not order a few free fabric swatches to match colour with other furniture or decor? What's not to love about your sofa being handmade to your specific requirements, especially for you, and delivered right to your door? To find out more and begin creating your dream sofa, simply visit sofa.com. And so to Jamie, Barb and Star. We'll begin with a wonderfully silly cue from the film called Palm Vista Hotel, as performed by the cast.
Welcome to Palm Vista, a Floridian paradise. All your dreams come true here.
Every drink is served with ice.
We're here to please and pamper. We love our clientele.
It's a middle-aged nirvana
at the Palm Vista Hotel.
Endless macaroni salad
at the all-you-can-eat buffet.
Switch up your food with fashion.
We change the sheets here every day.
Well, almost every day.
Everywhere I look, I see official couples. And soon my turn will come around. A man must do what it takes to win his sweetheart. So I'm gonna kill everyone in this town.
The spa is so relaxing.
The ocean is aquamarine. I'm recovering from my divorce here.
And the pool has chlorine.
So get ready for the time of your life.
I genuinely have to say thank you so much for Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar, because I described it to a mate last week as Despicable Me for adults. I loved it. I had so much fun with this film. And Kristen's a bit of a genius, I think, in terms of her physical comedy that she can do. And I love that she almost spreads that vibe around her entire cast, it would seem. But talk to me a little bit about Edgar and what the appeal was for you about this film and this role.
Well, to be honest, like, it was just the two of them, you know. It was Kristen and Annie, and their brilliance and their genius. You know, one of my favorite things in the world, pieces of art, offerings, whatever you want to call it, is a SNL sketch that Kristen did. It's Liza Minnelli.
Oh my God, it's amazing. Yeah.
To me, that's the funniest thing I've ever seen. And obviously, that, you know, beyond her sketch stuff and SNL days, she's just got this incredible body of work, and they're just so smart. And, you know, I was kind of sold purely on the title. And like, even hearing you say it there, every time I hear Barb and Star go to Vista Del Mar, I laugh. And I smile and I go, Jesus, like, what is that craziness? Why aren't more films called something like that? You know, I hadn't been too quiet about wanting to do a comedy. You know, I'd sort of told enough people, and certainly told my people. I'm with UTA in LA, who represent all the big comedy people. So I felt like it would happen eventually, but I didn't, and I really wanted it to, but I didn't think it would happen at that level straight away. You know, I didn't think I'd be doing it with the likes of Kristen and Annie straight away, and obviously unbelievably powerful producing team behind it of comedy titans of comedy themselves. So it was just mad, you know. But literally, I promise you, off the title, I was like, yeah, 100% I want to do this. I wanted to talk to Josh Greenbaum, the director. If you guys hit it off, then, you know, we could probably make this happen. I was like, great, listen, let's do it. I read the script, loved it, laughed the whole time, and I jumped a Zoom with Josh, and Josh and I, it was that thing of, I felt like I'd known Josh my entire life, and we just laughed and laughed and laughed. Like, it was, you know, usually set aside an hour for those calls, you know. I think we were on for like over 2 hours laughing and talking nonsense until it was like midnight here, because he was in LA, and I was like, dude, I just actually have to go to sleep, I could talk to you all night. Yeah, it was really easy decision.
Was the song and dance number in the script?
It was one line.
No. What was the line? He skips across the beach in song?
not even. Didn't even have that much information. It said Edgar performs an emotional song or an emotional dance. It might not even have said song. And actually, I don't think in any, even when I arrived in Mexico to start shooting it, I don't think they planned for me to sing it. You know, they had, I think they thought it would just be like, they had it recorded by the time I got to Mexico, and with a professional singer or whatever. And I think they just thought they'd keep that in. And then it was alluded to the fact that I could sing a wee bit and maybe I could do it and get, you know, give it a go. So we did that. But no, I think on my second Zoom, once I knew I was doing it, he said something about, you know, when you come out to Mexico, you know, and you'll have 2 or 3 days of doing, you know, dance rehearsals and stuff. And I was like, why? And he's like, you know, and I didn't want to act like I didn't know what I was doing. So I was like, honestly, it wasn't until I got there. And I started doing this, I was sort of thrown into this sort of dance rehearsal. And I was like, hold on, what is this for? I don't even know. And they're like, your big dance number. I was like, I don't even know what that is. And I had to like call like Josh and arrange a meeting with Josh and Kristen and Annie, going, what are they talking about? I said, oh no, now we see that as this big, you know, emotional like number. We're going to take 2 days to shoot it. And, you know.
Amazing. Have you danced before? Like, have you had dance training? Because, like, seriously, those pirouettes are pretty impressive.
I'm going to say that what I'll say is it's not all me. I'll say that...
Don't shatter the illusion!
There's moments that it's me. But actually, there's moments where you're meant to definitely tell that it's not me for the comedy of it. And yeah, just before I do the spin, like, I'm spinning and I'm a wee bit off balance. But I'm sort of spinning, and then it clearly goes to this like guy who was amazing. He didn't speak any English, and I just kept coming in and going, man, thank you so much, you look so cool. It's been great. I think he muster like, thank you. You know what, I can only, this is quite good, because the moments where I'm being silly, I it's not that I don't have an appreciation for dance, or I don't take people who dance professionally seriously, or I can't go to something contemporary dance, whatever, classical dancing and enjoy it and really appreciate the skill, but I can't dance seriously. I can't see, I can only take the piss when I'm dancing, whether I'm at a wedding or wherever. I'm never like sort of like in it, like really, I'm taking the piss all the time, and I'm trying to make whoever I'm dancing with laugh, and I'm joking about that. So I can't dance seriously, so it kind of worked out well for me that I have to dance in this comedy. And yeah.
It must be like, because I mean, listen, I love that whole notion of like when you're out and you're like dance like no one's watching, all that kind of stuff as well. But when you're doing something like this for work, it must still kind of release all those really happy endorphins in you, and you kind of come away, because it's just, it does it, watching it, it just makes you smile, it just makes you feel happy. Does doing it feel the same thing as well?
I think so. I think there's, you know, such a risk with any putting out anything, like we all know that, and you know, where on it's very easy to comment on the doing, but the doing of it is difficult. You know, you're putting yourself out there, exposing, every artist can relate to that. But with comedy particularly, it's like, Jesus, like, this, people might not find this funny. You're really going and we were so in it by that stage, you know, we're all so engrossed in it, we're all finding it funny, we know it's mad, like, we're not going, oh, this is like totally linear filmmaking, we know we're like making something really insane here, and it's going to be divisive, and thankfully the reaction has been monumentally positive. I'm sure there's naysayers out there, but for the most part, people love it, which is brilliant. And yeah, I guess it's like I was definitely having fun in those moments, and you do total freedom, you let yourself go. But like, you know, we're friends, like, you know that I sort of err on the lighter side of life anyway. I'm not a very serious person a lot of the time. So there's a big part of it is just me releasing this sort of inner like silliness that I have. Yeah. But then you sort of finish and then you'd be like, oh my God. Let the world see that. Was that the right call?
Yes, it was.
Well, the greatest thing is, I felt like there was limitless, like no ceiling of how silly I could be. And then I knew that there wasn't anyone around me creatively on that process who was going to go, Timmy, that was really silly. What are you doing? It was too silly. Yeah. You know, it was such a freeing experience.
Did you enjoy the singing side of it as well? Because you used to sing, you were in a band and stuff as well. Do you know what I mean? It was part of your world. And it has been as well, like, you know, sporadically throughout your career, you've performed, you've sung in films and stuff as well. But was that side of it nice?
No, I always say that I can sing as much as the next sort of douchey actor guy can sing. I think like most actors, male and female, can sing. I'm not saying there aren't people who aren't tone deaf who act for a living, but for the most, you've got this sort of former show-offy side to you, whether you want to admit that or not, the show-off aspect of it. You like to perform, that's your job. And I can sing a bit. I never wanted to be in a band. It was just one of those things that I kind of like happened, and then we were pushed along a certain path and we're quite far down the path. And I was like, Jesus, I didn't really want, oh, gee, okay, we're on stage. I didn't really want to do it, you know. So I'm very reluctant. I'm a reluctant singer because I did it in a forum that I was uncomfortable. So now when I just have to do it in the odd movie, I'm more comfortable. I guess, you know, the thing with this was, it's so hard to sing. Edgar's Prayer, it's a proper belter.
Proper show tune.
It is. It's big. And, you know, the first time I recorded it in Mexico City, I was really nervous. I actually had a bit of a cold. I wasn't feeling great. And I was like singing my heart out, but struggling to hit the notes and kept having to like transpose it down and stuff to suit my range. And then anyway, did it, and I did it a couple of times. I was getting more and more hoarse, and I was like, this is actually becoming a real struggle now. And then through the glass of the studio, Kristen and Annie arrived, and I said, oh guys, please, I can't.
Oh man.
Just can't, you know, and they were there for all the right reasons, you know, just to be supportive and show love and care. And, you know, they wrote the movie, they're producing the movie. And by this stage, they're good friends and they'd want to be there, and it's great. But it just piled on the pressure. And I think I sang pretty terribly. And then we, Millie and I got sent an early screening of it, screener for it, and we opened it up, What's the Link, or just the song, sorry, not the movie, of just the song. Anyway, I might dance, and we watched it, and it was all a lot of sensory overload, as you can imagine, having not seen it before. And then we finished it, and I said to Millie, I was like, my voice sounds good, like I'm quite happy with my voice. And she was like, that wasn't you. I guess I've become so accustomed to the backing track of like the professional singer they had do the original track, and I was just now convinced that that was me. And then subsequently found out that I didn't really sing well enough in Mexico City to put it on. So then I re-recorded it at Real World Studios, Peter Gabriel Studios, where weirdly, in this whole mad 360, when I was in a band, we spent a week at Real World Studios recording an EP that never got saw the light of day, probably for the better. But we were there and we had breakfast with Peter Gabriel, and it was all really exciting at the time. And those studios are amazing there. And now I do like ADR there sometimes for movies. So that's where I re-recorded it in fuller voice, and I didn't have a cold, and that's what's in the movie.
Burning like my blood's in a pan on a stove, and it's heating me up to the max. So I'm running my legs just as fast as I can, to the left, to the right. I'm a frustrated man. Now I'm flicking my tiptoes to kick up the sand, 'cause I can't understand all this fire that's raging inside me. Seagulls in the sand, can you hear my prayer? I keep trying, but I'm getting nowhere. Heads in a fog, I'm under her spell. Am I in heaven or am I in hell? Leaping, doing the splits from my heart, going higher and higher, my legs spread apart. Now I'm twirling like a baby ballerina who's digging a hole with the force of his feet. Watch me climbing. I'm going up a palm tree like a cat up a palm tree who's decided to go up a palm tree. Seagull on the tire, can you hear my prayer? I keep trying, but I'm getting away. Heads in a fog, I'm under a spell. Am I in heaven or am I in hell?
That's the problem we're having. A wife who's a brilliant composer and musician, and that she's like instantly there. She's like, it's not you. Sorry. And then you're talking about kind of every most actors have a voice and stuff. And listen, I loved Wild Mountain Time as well. But having, you know, Emily there, who, you know, talking about people who can sing, there is somebody who has got some singing chops on her. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, we were at the first glimpse of that, you know, long before Emily and I were closer friends and before we'd worked together. We were at her, Felicity, her sister, married Stanley Tucci. They're very good friends of ours. We were at their wedding 7 years ago, and Emily sang like full-on opera, like solo, like a cappella, like unbelievable. Like, I think she sang like Ave Maria or something. I mean, something insane and like pitch perfect. So she can really, really sing, and it's really effortless for her. You know, she'll claim that she gets very nervous. I'm sure she gets nervous, but that gets very effortless, and it does just sit within her very comfortably, where I would have to really strain to get any kind of decency out of my voice.
I love that kind of, I don't want to spoil it for people because it's not out here in the UK yet, but there's a really nice scene at the end of the film that involves the pair of you on stage, which people should look forward to for that one.
Now the summer time is coming, and the flowers are richly blooming, and the wild mountain thyme grows around the blooming heather. Will you go, lassie? And we'll all go together to pluck wild mountain thyme all around the blooming heather. Will you go, lassie, go? I will bear my love a bower by the clear silver fountain, and I'll cover it over with the flowers of the mountain. Will you go, lassie, go? And we'll all go together to pluck wild mountain thyme all around the blooming heather. Will you
heard, I was just thinking about it today as well. We've had so many directors on the podcast that you've worked with as well that have kind of really talked so highly of you as well. Everybody from Sean Ellis to Emma Forrest as well. I loved Untogether. I thought it was a fantastic film. And the way she used music with that Primal Scream track as well, I just thought was absolutely amazing and such a great way of highlighting how an existing piece of music can, even though you know it, can have a very specific connection with what you're watching. There's no dialogue, you know, it's just watching these two people, you know, meander down this road. But the power of it was extraordinary, I thought.
Totally. And I love that about music. And I love that about the idea of people writing music and having no idea how it's going to be appreciated, how it's going to be used, you know. And yeah, who's to say, you know, 20 years later, someone can't use this track that you had very different intention in writing, or thought it might have a different appeal, or maybe it did have a different appeal at the time and a different effect, but then it can be sort of recycled into evoking something totally different in people in a totally different environment. You know, that's what's sort of amazing about music and the strength of just a really good song. Film do this all the time, where you hear a song and it's a cover and it's a totally different take on a song, you know, like famously, like Tears for Fears at the end of Donnie Darko. Like, you know, I remember at the end of that movie listening to that going, I don't really know these lyrics. And I love that. And I the power of music in film is massive. And obviously I know more about that now, being married to Millie, than I would have ever before. But, you know, now Conor McNeil, who you obviously know, who you've had on, and I have written this film together, and that's a music, a certain genre of music is a big part of our film. Mm. And that part is so exciting, you know, like just exploring that world and imagining how that's going to be, how that's going to sit in there, and what effect that's going to have, because that piece of music was never... And they would never, when they wrote that, have envisaged this backdrop with this song. And I do love it. It had all these different impacts and different forms, you know.
All around me are familiar faces, worn out places, worn out faces, bright and early for their daily races, going nowhere, going nowhere. Tears are filling up their glasses. No expression, no expression. Hide my head, I wanna drown my sorrow. No tomorrow, no tomorrow. And I find it kinda funny, I find it kinda sad. Dreams in which I'm dying are the best I've ever had. I find it hard to tell you, I find it hard to take. When people run in circles, it's a very, very mad.
I know you can't say much about that project. Conor was really funny about it when we were talking. He's like, "Oh yeah, I've got." Well, I can't tell you anything, but when you were writing it, did you make playlists or anything? Did you have music to kind of with sort of stimulation and with help and kind of with mood and emotion and stuff like that?
We did sometimes. We wrote it during lockdown. We wrote it, you know, like me sat here. Him sat in London with our laptops open and final draft, and like the collaboration mode and final draft, which is kind of great, but doesn't work totally perfectly. And only one of you can write at a time. And then if you expire because you're discussing something for too long, you have to like sort of re-collaborate. It's quite a frustrating process. And then when lockdown eased a little bit, I was able to start going to London, and we would sit at, we have an apartment in London, and I'd be, Conor would sit at one end of the table, sort of 3 or 4 meters apart, and I'd sit at the other end of the table, but still kind of separate. But at least we were in the same room. And at that point, we did start to listen to a lot of music. Yeah, we did. It made sense because we were together and discover music. And, you know, it is so pivotal in the movie that that was a great, fun experience, like finding music that we didn't know. And Then when lockdown eased even further, he came and stayed with us here in the Cotswolds, and we finished it.
Do you ever use? It's funny. I always sometimes think when there are really kind of strong characters, particularly within, I guess, more TV than film, where you get to understand them or learn about them in a longer length of time, of kind of going, if it's not part of the narrative, like, I wonder what they would listen to music wise, like Paul and the Fall. I always kind of really wondered what kind of music would he listen to? What's his kind of musical taste, sort of thing? Because sometimes the way that can be used in productions can tell you so much about a character that no dialogue can, almost in a way. Do you ever use that as a way when you're prepping for roles and stuff?
Yeah, I have done that, and I've done that very specifically with certain filmmakers and with The Fall with Paul Spector. Like Alan, did it make it in? I can't even remember now. Did it make it in the first series where there maybe is a moment where he is playing records? Alan had this idea that Spector's very into blues massively, and that was kind of his switch off from his head. I'm pretty sure Alan, we did have a playlist of, or I think I got Alan to, because like always, you want to be educated on everything your whole life. I guess you should be trying to learn more about it. And my blues history wasn't strong enough, really. And so I think I got Alan just to actually make me a general, like, you know, blues for beginners type, like,
yeah,
that I could then sort of incorporate into developing then for Spector. But yeah, there's certain times, actually, Emma Forrest for On Together, she did this very cool thing at the end where she sort of made a playlist for a few of us at the end and gave us a playlist of all these songs that had affected the writing of the movie. So yeah, it's cool that, you know, I have I'm about to go to Australia, as you know, and my character, there's a couple of music references, and again, I do have to sing, but only a wee bit.
It's like it's written in every contract now that you have to must sing. He will only do it if there's a musical number.
I try to get the opposite of that into every contract, but even that, like, you know, I'm playing around with a couple of songs that I didn't know very well. I think music's always really close, and it just will be close to, because it's in everything. I'm not going to do a television show or a movie that's without music. I doubt. So it's always, I'm always going to be connected to it in that way, and I love that about it, you know. And actually, I'm so excited then, because, you know, Connor and I have doing our movie, and then we've now started a production company, and we're building our slate, and we're acquiring all this material, and it's really, really exciting, and a lot of time and energy, and it's brilliant. I'm learning all this different stuff, but I'm very excited about them working with Millie on stuff together, which would be a bit of a dream.
Yeah, that's amazing. It is that thing, isn't it, of being in a position where you want to generate your own, you know, your ideas, and have that output of being able to bring all these worlds together. And yeah,
you often don't even know what that is going to be as well, you know. It sort of surprises you, you know. And you can find that, you know, the without saying too much about our movie that we wrote, but, you know, that's a sort of genre that I know a bit about, but know so much more about now, that I wouldn't have thought if I was ever using music heavily in something I wrote, it would be that genre. That's where we set our story, and it's pivotal to our story. So, yeah, it's exciting because music is endless. There's no, you know, there's people who know a lot about music, but they don't know everything. That's what's so cool about it. And it's constantly changing, and we've been offered new stuff all the time, and new variations of formats that we thought we knew about. And, you know, and I love all music. I think people who say they love all music, you can either be, that means they actually don't have a fucking clue about music.
Yeah.
No, I love everything I hear on the radio. It's like, don't know anything about music, you don't care about music.
Yeah.
And then they say, I love all music, you really do get something from all music, and an appreciation from all music. And particularly as I get a wee bit older, like in my 20s, I was quite cynical, I think, about music that was like Radio 1 or whatever, even though, like, I've tried to write music and sort of unsuccessfully, for want of a better term, in the past. I know it's hard, but I guess in my 20s, I would have been like, oh, that's crap. I can't believe why people like that. And now I totally understand why.
Yeah.
that I thought was cheesy in my 20s. I know, I get it. I see the appeal. I understand why X amount of millions of kids would get that. And
yeah,
who am I to say they shouldn't, you know? So I have an appreciation, I think, of all music now in a really healthy way, I think.
I think it's really interesting as well in terms of like watching my kids and how they react to music. And they don't, you know, when I was growing up, it was that you were into a type of music, you know, it was about genre and stuff. Whereas like now, my kids don't really think about music in genre because they learn so much about music through film, through, you know, the Guardians of the Galaxy having this bonkers soundtrack or combined with the score. I mean, they started watching The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air last night and we were like three episodes in and Spike, he's 8 and he's already trying to learn the words for the theme tune. You know, it's like, it's all that stuff's just brilliant and watching their reaction to things. So I think it's really healthy that as you get older, weirdly, those barriers almost drop in a way as well, don't they? In terms of, you, like you say, you kind of lose the cynicism in a way.
Totally. I also just love the idea of another person in the world knowing all the lyrics to the Prince of Bel-Air opening theme, which I thought it was just like, you know, a certain generation, we all know. But I love the idea of this kid still working that out.
Now this is a story all about how my life got flipped, turned upside down. And I'd like to take a minute, just sit right there. I'll tell you how I became the prince of a town called Bel-Air. In West Philadelphia, born and raised, on the playground is where I spent most of my days. Chilling out, maxing, relaxing, all cool and all, shooting some b-ball outside of the school. When a couple of guys who were up to no good started making trouble in my neighborhood. I got in one little fight and my mom got scared and said, "You're moving with your auntie and uncle in Bel-Air." I begged and pleaded with her day after day, but she packed my suitcase and sent me on my way. She gave me a kiss and then she gave me my ticket. I put my Walkman on and said, "I might as well kick it. First class, yo, this is bad. Drinking orange juice out of a champagne glass. Is this what the people of Bel-Air living like? This might be alright. But wait, I hear the prissy bourgeois and all that. Is this the type of place that they just send this cool cat? I don't think so. I see when I get there. I hope they're prepared for the Prince of Bel-Air."
It was so interesting putting it on last night. We like started, like we saw an advert for it on something and they love, obviously like love Will Smith, like Men in Black and all that. So they were like straight in, yeah, let's watch it. And it's also just quite nice and something that we can all watch together. And I was like, is it going to be dated? Is it going to? And they were like just howling with laughter because he's so physical as well, you know, always kind of slightly camp dancing that he does. And oh, it's brilliant. It's so much fun to watch again.
I'm gonna get the kids into that. Our kids have been the eldest has been into Sister a bit recently. She started watching that, which is obviously not a dissimilar time in like late 90s, was it, that came out. So it's a sort of similar time period and I remember watching it a bit, and also it's cool when that sort of regurgitation starts to happen for your kids, you know.
Yeah, listen, I'll let you go, but I thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us. And maybe we can do another catch up as well when the Belfast is released as well, because I know there's music to talk about within that as well. So
yeah, music's a massive part of Belfast, and I saw a cut of it, I don't know, about 6 weeks ago now, and it's really exciting. It's really beautiful.
Awesome. Well, let's do another one of these for that then, if you're up for it. Thanks so much, mate. So great to chat to you weirdly about work stuff, but thank you. Much appreciated, Jamie.
See you later. Thanks.
Hey!
From the score to Barb and Star, go to Vista Del Mar. That's Vista Del Mar, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with Jamie Dornan. My huge thanks to Jamie for taking the time to talk to us, particularly stepping in at the last minute. I am forever in your debt, sir. Barb and Star is available to watch on home entertainment formats now and is just a tonic, I have to say, in these troubled times. If you want to hear my conversation with Emma Forrest about Untogether that we talked about, or indeed any other of our 240-odd episodes, then head to edithbowman.com. Please follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We are at Soundtracking UK. And be sure to check out our YouTube channel too, where I'm putting together a regular show as a companion piece to this podcast. Coming up in the latest episode, we will have Murray Gold, we'll have Viggo Mortensen, but you can check out previous episodes, which include Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. Next up, I am beyond thrilled to welcome back to Soundtracking the one and only Steve McQueen. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then. In the meantime, stay safe, folks.